Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. I hope you all had a great holiday. I mean, we were gone for a couple of weeks, and I hope that you enjoyed it. If you were down here in Florida, it got pretty cold, but not near as cold as it did for you people up in New York. So I hope you're all thawing out both here and there. Yes, we're live on 95.9 and 106.9 on the Treasure Coast every Monday night at 6 o'clock. But if you're listening on Long Island, it's Wednesday, and I know it's supposed to have warmed up by then. So I wish you the best. Following the Doors is a tough act to follow, but we have a great show tonight with a most interesting subject, a subject I think that you will want to hear more about. Dr. Payal Patel from Brain Matters Research is here, and we're going to talk about Alzheimer's disease and dementia, but we're going to talk about it from a slightly different perspective than most people usually do. We're not going to talk about it from a pharmacological perspective, although we'll touch on that. We're going to talk about it from a non-pharmacological perspective. We're going to talk about how environment, behavior can all impact the road that we're on with Alzheimer's and dementia, and I think probably with other chronic diseases as well, with other neurocognitive diseases as well. Now, I'm going to tell you more about Dr. Patel in just a minute or so, but first, I want to give a big shout out and a thank you to the ladies from the ORT organization in Boynton Beach. They hosted me today. I had the opportunity to speak to them. ORT, if you don't know, is a wonderful organization. There are many chapters around the area, around the country. My wife actually helped start a chapter about almost 45 years ago up on Long Island. So ORT is a wonderful group. They were very good listeners today. They asked great questions. I spoke at Meisner Falls. I couldn't thank them enough, or can't thank them enough, for volunteering the way that they do, raising money the way that they do, and supporting people in need the way that they do. So they do unbelievable work, and I want to thank them. But you're here really to listen about or to my guest. So let me tell you about Dr. Payal Patel. She is a neurologist specializing in cognitive disorders, including dementia and neuropsychiatry. Prior to joining Brain Matters Research in Delray, Dr. Patel completed her fellowship in cognitive behavioral neurology at the Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's Disease Center at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. I'll bet you she's glad to be here, not there today. She conducted her residency in neurology and internship at the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Peoria, the OSF St. Francis Medical Center located there in Peoria. She earned her medical degree at Ross University School of Medicine, and she's been practicing medicine since 2008. Her areas of special interest include sports-related traumatic brain injury, non-pharmacological approach to behavioral symptoms of dementia, for example, biography-based care, identification of meaningful activities and creative arts therapy, and treatable causes of cognitive disorders, which include vitamins deficiencies, autoimmune and paraneoplastic etiologies, mood disorders, and sleep disorders. Dr. Patel, welcome to Oh My God. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you so much for that warm welcome.
Thank you. And thanks for making the trip. It's a little bit of a trip for you to up here, so I really do appreciate it. Why don't we start at the beginning so people understand what we're going to talk about tonight? What is the difference when we say non-pharmacological versus pharmacological treatments? What exactly are we talking about? What is the difference? Why should people care about it?
So the main difference really is pharmacological being medication treatment. This is things like antidepressants, antipsychotics. Non-pharmacological really taking a look at the patient and the environment and trying to narrow this bridge between the change in environment and the change in changes that occur in the patient as they progress through the stages of dementia.
Right. There, most people, I think you would agree, most people, when they think of Alzheimer's disease in particular or dementia, and we'll ask about the differences between them in just a moment, most people think that it is purely a memory disease. But and of course, memory is a big part of Alzheimer's and dementia. There is no doubt about that. That is the thing we recognize most, see most often, and respond to most often. But the reality is it's not really just a memory disease. It goes far beyond that, right? And it manifests itself in a lot of different ways.
Exactly. I mean, there are changes in behavior, changes in personality. There's one study that says 98% of patients with Alzheimer's have a change in behavior or personality at some point during the process.
Yeah. That presentation I spoke at today, you know, they asked what some of the early warning signs were. And I said one of those, just exactly what you kind of said, behavioral changes, anger, for example,
sure.
is kind of an early warning sign if people are really angry more often than not. So just so everybody understands, dementia is not a disease, right? Can you explain the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's and other neurocognitive diseases?
Yep. So I like to put it really simply. And the way I like to describe it is dementia is a change in cognition or memory that comes on insidiously and progresses gradually over time and really impacts daily functioning to a significant degree. And that daily impact on daily functional activities is what separates it from mild cognitive impairment, where we have changes in memory or cognition, but they really don't significantly impact our everyday ability to complete tasks.
Right. But dementia, again, is not a diagnosis, right?
No.
So there are many different kinds of dementia.
Exactly. Right? And so one of the common questions that we get is, are Alzheimer's and dementia the same thing? Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, the most common type out there.
Right. Do we know how many dementias there are?
Oh, well, so there's Alzheimer's, which is the most common. After that comes vascular and Lewy body dementias, Lewy body being a combination of dementia and Parkinsonism. And then we've got more rare forms, such as primary progressive aphasia, which presents with primary language disturbance. And then we have things like frontotemporal degeneration or dementia, in which case we have significant personality and behavioral changes,
right,
along with cognitive changes.
So what causes changes in behavior in dementia?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the changes in the patient's cognition and memory and ability to adapt, that change in cognitive flexibility. And so now we're having more difficulty with tasks that we were able to do more simply, and that can range from anything like managing the finances, balancing a checkbook, or even the simple tasks like driving that we take for granted every day. And I think it's that inability to do things the same way that really results in frustration and oftentimes depression.
So is depression automatic with people who are afraid that they are experiencing dementia of some kind? Can we expect that? Is it an automatic?
It's not necessarily an automatic, but the rate of depression is definitely higher among patients with dementia. And that is not just because of the situational changes, but also the neurochemical changes that occur along with the changes in the memory circuits.
So the non-pharmacological approach, addresses some of that. And before I get to some of the specifics there, I think one of the questions I get asked all the time is, do I know that I have dementia, and what do I think about it, or what do I think I have Alzheimer's disease? Is this a sign of Alzheimer's disease? Does this matter? I know there are differences between normal aging and Alzheimer's disease, and we can talk about some of the differences, and if we have time, I guess we can. But I'm really asking it from a point of view of, there's a tremendous amount of fear associated with this disease, and I'm sure that you see that all too often.
Sure.
Do you have any words of soothing wonder for all of the people who are wondering, oh my God, am I losing my mind? Because that is what people think.
No, you're right. That's a good question. And this is what I say, and my partner, Dr. Brody, who works with me, says the same thing. Where there's smoke, there could be a fire. If you think there's a change, get it checked out. Get a free memory screen. We offer them at Brain Matters Research.
Right.
See if there's something going on. At the very least, you can get a nice baseline. If there is something going on, there are plenty of clinical research trials out there. There are definitely disease-modifying drugs that are under investigation. You have a chance of doing more if you know what the diagnosis is sooner than later.
So we were going to do it later, but since you brought it up, let's talk about it. Tell us about Brain Matters Research, because a lot of people don't really know that what you do is available to them.
Sure. So I work out at Brain Matters Research. We're at the corner of Lake Ida and Congress. So we are a clinical research trial center where we offer over 25 clinical research trials. These are for patients that have symptoms of Alzheimer's, or also for patients who are at the preclinical or asymptomatic stages. So this might apply to people who have a strong family history of Alzheimer's disease and say, well, hey, listen, does my brain have some early changes that might be consistent with Alzheimer's, and can I do something about it before symptoms even begin?
Right.
Because we know pathology for Alzheimer's starts to lay into place in the brain 10, 12 years ahead of symptoms.
Right.
So,
and then it can go on for 10 or 12 years. So most people don't really understand. This could be a 20-year.
Absolutely.
A 20-year product. And I think when people understand I believe that the first person cured of Alzheimer's disease will be in a clinical trial. So when I talk about clinical research, I think everybody everywhere should enroll in a clinical research trial.
Sure.
People don't want to be guinea pigs. People have all sorts of excuses not to do it. But your trials include, as you said, preventative,
mm-hmm.
all right, arresting,
yep.
late stage, reversing. You have, regardless of where you are on the Alzheimer's spectrum, so to speak,
yep.
There is still reason for you to investigate the potential of getting involved in a clinical research trial.
Absolutely. And I will say this, that out of those 25 clinical research trials, the majority of those trials are targeted towards patients who are in the milder stages of the disease.
Right.
So again, very early diagnosis is very important.
Right. It is true. So we haven't yet gotten to the reason that we are here, which is to talk about the non-pharmacological. We've talked about all of the drugs, and we'll talk more about drugs later. But we do want to talk about the behavioral modification that we can employ in our lives. And we will do that as soon as we come back. If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. If you're listening live, you're on 95 or the Turnpike, and you're on your way home, or if you just got home, we're glad that you're with us on 95.9, the True Oldie Station, or 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. If you're listening on Long Island at 103.9, we're thrilled that you're with us. We're talking with Dr. Pal Patel with Brain Matters Research, who is a neurologist specializing in Alzheimer's dementia and other treatments besides just pharmacological treatments. And so we're going to talk more about that. If you have questions for Dr. Patel or for me, it's really easy. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client. Because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're glad that you're with us. Happy New Year to all, and welcome back. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. Here tonight with Dr. Patel. With Brain Matters Research. Brain Matters Research is an organization that is doing currently about 25 clinical trials in the world of Alzheimer's and dementia. They do wonderful work, but we're here more to talk tonight about non-pharmacological solutions. So let's talk about that. I think all of the behavior, Dr. Patel, begins to change, or behaviors begin to change as the disease begins to unwind and unfold. What causes behavioral changes?
Well, the biggest cause is that you have this change in the neurocircuitry in the brain, which is affecting both cognition and affecting things from a personality behavior perspective. And so really you've got this increased vulnerability to stressors. And those stressors are really simply divided into three things. So caregiver stressors, premorbid patient factors, and then also environmental factors as well.
So how do we address those? So, I mean, we can do things that don't include drugs that can impact behaviors.
Mm-hmm. You're right. So environmentally, there are simple things that we can do. Sometimes overstimulation can cause agitation and behaviors. That overstimulation can be things like overcluttering of the environment. So decluttering can help. And that's a simple thing that people don't often realize. Mm-hmm. Also making sure that we institute a structured daytime program of activity. Keyword being activity. A lot of patients, they're not doing a whole lot, and sometimes that's the apathy factor where they just don't have that initiative that they did before. And so making sure that we identify appropriate activities of interest and then institute them into a daily structured routine is really important.
So this becomes, you kind of said it, this becomes a very isolating disease, right?
Yep.
We tend to, because we can't play bridge perhaps as well as we used to, and so we can't do that. Maybe we don't play tennis as well because it's affecting us physically.
Right.
Maybe we can't keep score bowling, you know, or golf. So we tend to withdraw some. So that's kind of what you're talking about,
yep.
Right? That's the worst thing that can happen. Am I correct?
Absolutely. This is why I always say do what you can as best as you can. And I think it's the role of caregivers and people surrounding us to identify that, hey, listen, we're getting discouraged because we can't do what we were doing before as well. But we have that interest. Let's find a way to simplify it and recognize that there are limitations, but that we can still accomplish some of these tasks.
family caregivers feed into this, right? I'll do that for you, sweetheart, right? I'll do that for you. Nothing could be worse.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So how do we break people of those bad habits other than preaching?
You know, yes, preaching is one of those things. But I say, again, with going with do what you can as best as you can goes, let them do what they can. If it doesn't present a safety issue and it's not done perfectly, that's okay.
Right.
If we wash the dishes and they're not perfect, that's all right. It still gives that same sense of accomplishment, and that sense of accomplishment helps keep mood at a certain level.
Right.
It helps reduce behaviors because we have activity and we have those good feelings about ourselves.
Behavior begets behavior.
Yep.
Right? Correct?
Absolutely.
So you talk, I think what you're really talking about there is managing expectations,
that
right?
Too.
I mean, ours and theirs, right?
Yep.
So that's a challenge.
It is a challenge, and I think we have very strong expectations sometimes for the people around us as well as ourselves, but we have to strive for good enough, not perfect.
Right.
In this disease.
And how about diet and exercise?
Diet and exercise are huge as well. I think activity increases circulation to the brain. You've got release of good chemicals in the brain that help with mood, that gives us a sense of accomplishment with something that's doable and manageable. It also, as far as nutrition goes, you know, avoiding foods that have those bad chemicals and preservatives and things that can be helpful. Making sure that you have foods that are high in omega-3 fatty acids can help with brain stimulation, brain function, I should say. And so, I mean, that's a whole other topic in itself.
Right, right. People want to know, I think there's a whole host of questions surrounding this disease. How bad is it going to get? How fast? Is this normal in the disease? What's going to happen next? Mm-hmm. And the truth is nobody knows the answer to that, right? I mean, if you met one person with Alzheimer's, you've met one person with Alzheimer's.
No, it's not a cookie cutter disease. Every person is different.
Right.
And so the best thing I think that we can do is anticipate to some extent some of the challenge or safety issues that we might have along the ways. And after that, We live each day like it's our last, which we do regardless when we're older, I think.
Right. Well, since you're not older
I'm
yet,
not,
you know.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I live
As
each
I
day
imagine.
Like it could be my last day. You, on the other hand, have a long way to go. For those who can't, well, you can't see her because this is radio. She's much younger than me, and she's probably much younger than you in the audience, but it's all good. Well, I want to talk about I have so many questions to ask, but I want to talk about structure again. I want to talk about using social history in that. I also want to talk about lifestyle and caregiver stress. I have so much to talk to you about. But if you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom, here tonight with Dr. Payal Patel. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease. We're talking about pharmacological treatment versus non-pharmacological treatment. We're talking about taking a different view of the disease, looking at it from a different perspective, how you can impact it both on yourself and on the person who in your family may be struggling with this disease. Because more than most diseases, Alzheimer's and dementia is a family disease. Those who have listened to this show for years understand, as we've talked about Alzheimer's disease, this is not a one-shoe-fits-all or one-size-fits-all disease or solution. So we have so much to talk to Dr. Patel about. If you're listening on 95.9 or 106.9 and it's Monday evening, it's live, I can't thank you enough for being with us. If you're listening on 103.9 FM on Long Island, it's Wednesday night. I hope you had a great day. I hope you're warming up. I hope the snow is melting. But regardless, and if you're listening on Sunday morning, we hope the day ahead is particularly good for you as well. If you have questions for my guest, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were station might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're glad that you're with us. Happy and healthy New Year to you all. If you're just tuning in, I'm here with Dr. Payal Patel from Brain Matters Research. She is a neurologist specializing in Alzheimer's and other neurocognitive diseases. Brain Matters Research is an organization that is currently involved in about 25 clinical trials designed to prevent and maybe even cure Alzheimer's one day. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But first, Dr. Patel, one of the questions that I get more frequently than any others is, can you prevent this disease? Can we slow the progression down? And I believe that today we have reached the point where we can all agree that we can impact the progression, but we're not quite there with prevention. Am I right about that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think some of the most important things for prevention include increased education and keeping the brain stimulated, keeping an eye on your nutrition and your physical activity. And these things are I think they're minimized when it comes to Alzheimer's, but they are very important.
Right. Most people glaze over when you tell them to eat more vegetables and get out and exercise. But there is real substantial clinical research and support for brain healthy lifestyle. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Right. And what would constitute that for most of our audience, brain healthy lifestyle?
Brain healthy lifestyle. So that would include exercise, trying to exercise with something like cardiovascular exercise for at least 5 days a week, 20 to 30 minutes, something that gets your heart rate going, increases circulation and oxygenation to the brain, which is good in terms of getting rid of those toxins and so forth. And we know that the preliminary changes that occur in Alzheimer's include an inflammatory cascade. So keeping that oxygen flowing to the brain and getting rid of toxins and oxidants and so forth is very important.
Right.
And then, of course, diet is important. And so one of the diets that we look at is a Mediterranean diet with not eliminating meats completely, but just a lean meat diet with things like chicken, white meats, fish,
right,
salmon, and so forth.
At the same time, Brain Matters Research is working hard on coming up or helping the big drug companies come up with pharmacy solutions, pharmacological solutions. By the end of the night, I'm going to have that word down pat, I promise. Pharmacological solutions. So two questions, a two-part question. One, do we have any drugs that work? And two, are we close to drugs that work? Or may work, or we think might work?
Well, we currently don't have any FDA-approved treatments. We do have a couple of different investigational drug trials that we're involved in where we're looking to reduce the amount of amyloid plaque in the brain. So these patients have had, at an early stage, have had an amyloid PET scan proving that they have presence of amyloid plaque in the brain. And they are infusional trials involving monoclonal antibodies. And these monoclonal antibodies kind of, they go through an IV infusion, they glom onto this beta amyloid plaque and to help to dissolve it, we think.
Right. Yeah. I know a couple of years ago, there were a couple of drug companies and everybody thought we were really close to a drug that was going to impact one part of the disease process. But currently, are we as positive about the progress we're making today? Do we still feel that we're closer to a drug than we have ever been?
I think we are, and one could say that I might be biased because I work at a research trial center. But look, I think that every patient is different, and everybody's pathological process is different. So we've been targeting amyloid plaque for a long time, and now we've started to see a shift where we're targeting tau. Tau tangles, that's another part of the pathology for Alzheimer's. And so who responds to the tau drugs and who responds to the amyloid drugs? We don't know yet, but we have seen success. And I do think that patients that we've had who have enrolled in these trials who are receiving the drugs, if they weren't, would be progressing at a more rapid rate.
Right.
These are the only disease modifying options that we have out there.
So we're looking just from a 30,000 foot level, we're looking at disease modifying, right? Either stabilizing it or even reversing some of the symptoms or some of the behaviors, or we're looking at prevention or we're looking at reversal. There's a whole host of things, but we're not there just yet.
We're not there just yet.
And no. The current drugs on the market, there's great misunderstanding about those drugs. Am I right?
There is. So those common drugs may be things like Aricept or Namenda that you've heard of. These are FDA-approved medications and two different class of medications used to treat patients with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia too. They don't reverse the process. These are medications that are labeled as symptomatic therapy. So in the case of Aricept, for example, this is a cholinesterase inhibitor which boosts acetylcholine levels in the brain. Simply put, a chemical that helps those brain cells communicate. We think that they're successful in about 50% of patients for maybe 6 to 12 months from a cognitive standpoint. So again, not effective in everybody, and as you may have noticed in my description, it doesn't do anything to alter the tau or the amyloid in the brain.
Right. Which is why we need to look to affect behaviors in ways that we absolutely have total control over, and those are the behavior modification techniques that we have touched on throughout the show tonight.
Absolutely.
All right, so that we can get people's behavior to change based on what influences we put in front of them. And we're going to talk more about how we identify those, and we're going to talk about a program that you feel very strongly about. You call it DICE, and I'm going to let you explain that as soon as we come back. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, and so is my mom. I am here tonight with Dr. Pal Patel. Dr. Patel is with Brain Matters Research, where they are doing 25 clinical trials, but she's not only involved in the clinical trials side of the equation, she's passionate about affecting your behavior to affect the people in your lives who may be struggling with the disease, to affect their behavior, to help them lead a better quality of life. It is all about improving the quality of life for the people struggling with Alzheimer's and related dementias. So it's really, really critical that we understand that how we approach the disease can impact the disease progression in ways that we did not necessarily think possible. So if you have questions about that or anything else related to Alzheimer's and dementia, you should call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Thank you for listening in. If you're listening on Monday night, 95.9 or 106.9 FM, we are live and we're glad that you're with us. If you're listening on Sunday morning, we did the show a few days ago. And of course, if you're on Long Island, we are also glad that you're with us. We hope you had a great day. It's Wednesday evening. I'm here tonight with Dr. Pal Patel. Dr. Patel is with Brain Matters Research. She is a neurologist. She's an Alzheimer's disease specialist. We're talking about pharmacological versus non-pharmacological approaches to the treatment of Alzheimer's and related diseases. You have an approach Dr. Patel that you call DICE. Mm-hmm. What is it? How does it work? Could you help us out with that?
Yeah, sure. So DICE was an approach that was developed by a practitioner up in Michigan by the name of Helen Kales and a group of individuals she worked with. And simply put, D stands for describe as far as the behavior. I stands for investigate. C stands for create. And E stands for evaluate. And then I can go through each of those bullet points if we've got the time for it.
Sure.
So describe really goes to what the caregiver says is the behavior. What is the context of it? What? When? Where? Is there something that's triggering it? Is there something in the environment, for example? Is it clutter, like we mentioned earlier, that's cluttering overstimulation and behavior? And part of this is also what is the level of distress to both the patient and the caregiver? Sometimes, you know, the patient might have paranoid delusions, and these are not distressful to the patient, but they're distressful to the caregiver.
Right.
And so understanding who is distressed by it, I think, is really a big factor. And then a key component of that, of course, is safety factors. What kind of safety concerns do we have in relation to the behavior? Does the behavior even create a safety concern? If it doesn't, then we might be more prone to trying to kind of try to modify how we approach that behavior, how we're accepting that behavior and kind of moving on from it. And then investigate really goes on to say, what's causing the behavior? Is it something like pain? Is it medications? Is there a general medical condition like a urinary tract infection? These are all common causes of changes in behavior. Sometimes overstimulation or changes in our general routine. That one I can't stress enough, because patients with memory loss and dementia really, really, they rely on routine and structure more so than the average person.
Right.
So any kind of change to that can be disruptive and can cause all kinds of behaviors. And then create really is pretty self-explanatory. This is where the physician, the caregiver, anybody else involved, licensed mental health counselor, anybody involved in altering this behavior really sit down and come up with a plan as to how we're going to address that behavior. And every behavior is different. Every plan for every patient is different. There's no one cookie cutter plan. And I think that's important to understand.
Right.
And then evaluate really goes to see how well this plan is taking effect. Is it, how successful is it? Is it reducing the behavior? Is it reducing the severity of the behavior?
Understanding who the patient was prior to their being diagnosed with the disease can really impact, right? Their
Absolutely.
Social history, where they came from, that can make a tremendous impact on the decisions you make about how to help somebody with the disease.
It can, definitely.
Right.
So we say this, personality traits that were present before the disease are probably going to be present during the disease and might even be amplified that much so. So we're not going to change the patient. I think we have to understand that as caregivers and people around the patient, we have to be the ones to change how we think and how we deal with things. We have to be more flexible and less rigid in how we deal with these behaviors.
Right. We talk about it all the time. Take a checkup from the neck up before you walk in to see somebody because they don't care about your problems. And we'd care about your problems, obviously. That's why you do what you do is what I do what I do. But the truth is, the person with the disease isn't doing it on purpose. They're not being obstinate. They're not being difficult. They're not being whatever they're being.
Right.
All right. There's a reason for it being that way, and they have a brain disease.
Absolutely. Right? And many times they're behaving the way they're behaving because of an unmet need.
Right. Right.
And that's really important to understand.
So I talk about this regularly. I talked about it today at the presentation I was talking to you about before. This is as much a language disease as it is a brain disease. People's inability to communicate what their needs are sometimes can impact their ability to function properly. So you have some helpful hints and tips and tools. I mean, you've mentioned cluttering a few times. You're right. Tumult, disorganization, frenetic behavior, all of this does terrible things. But there are other things that people can do besides just decluttering. Should we go through a couple of them?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is visual cues. So we have impairment of our ability to memorize information given to us verbally, but sometimes we have a better memory for visual information. And so I think sometimes simple things like stop signs on the doors we don't want patients to go through in the, within the home, signs labeling restrooms, bathrooms, simple things like that can help with visual spatial disorientation.
Right.
So that's a big one. I think other things are, this is an important one, breaking tasks down into simpler tasks. That's huge because sometimes we try to accomplish too much with one sentence, similar to what I'm doing with how I'm talking to you right now. But breaking things down into one step and two step commands is very important because that level of comprehension for complex information is just not the same.
Right. What you want for lunch is different than can I give you a peanut butter sandwich?
Right.
Right. It really does make a difference. And it does impact the behavior you get back. You said something earlier that is, I think, really, really important, is that how we behave and what we present is what we'll get back.
Right.
If we're not careful. So communication skills, both verbal and nonverbal,
right,
are really, really important.
Yep. So right? Patients know when caregivers are stressed, they can feel that stress, and that stress often manifests as behaviors.
Right.
So really doing your best to stay calm and making sure that you pay attention to self-care as a caregiver so that you're not exhibiting that stress around the patient is really important.
Right.
Also making sure to use a calm, soft tone versus a harsh, berating tone.
Right.
Just remember that this is the disease. It's not the patient. It's the disease. And they're not doing it voluntarily. And so we have to take a step back and just calm down the way that we approach things. When we want to react with anger or frustration, we have to take a step back and say it's the disease, not the person.
Right. And it's hard to remember. I mean, I think we need to understand that family caregivers go through a level of stress.
Yep.
That unless you're going through it, it's really hard for you to really appreciate and understand.
Yep.
So how do people reach you and Brain Matters Research if they'd like more information about clinical trials or they'd like to talk to you more? How do people go about doing that?
I've got a couple of different ways. So they can reach us by phone, of course. So our phone number is 374-8461. And of course, I don't use our phone number, so I'm struggling with it. And then my email, if they'd like to reach me personally, my email is patel@brainmattersresearch.com. And those are probably the two easiest ways to reach us. But if they were to Google us online, Brain Matters Research comes up, and they should be able to ask questions and make appointments and so forth online as well.
And for those of you who I mean, you have to trust me on this. Their facility is reasonably new. It's kind of really brand new. It is unbelievable to go through. It's really kind of a remarkable facility. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about KNOWIN90. We haven't talked about that at all. And I'll talk a little bit more about the clinical trials. But if you just tuned in, you're missing a great show because the show has been really full of useful information, whether you know somebody who has Alzheimer's disease, whether you think you may have Alzheimer's or dementia, or whether you're caring for somebody with Alzheimer's and dementia. But the good news is if you missed it, you don't have to miss it permanently because we podcast. So tomorrow we'll be up and running on iTunes at about, noon, maybe even later tonight. All right. You just search OMG, I am getting, and up we will pop. You can listen to this show or any of our other shows. You also, if you're not a podcaster, and I know not many are or not all are, we put it up on my website, which is www.palmbeach.comforcare.com, www.palmbeach.comforcare.com. And you just hit the radio link and you can listen to this show and all the others. Of course, if you don't have a radio, you do have a smartphone. So there's no excuse not to listen because there's an app for that. Of course, there's an app for that. It's called TuneIn Radio. And I think you find us on 960 AM. That's where it's found. But you can set your reminder to listen to us. And of course, we simulcast locally, around the country, and around the world on www.trueoldiesflorida.com, trueoldiesfla.com. And I encourage you to listen wherever you are, whenever you're not in front of your radio. Next week, I have a most interesting show. A couple of weeks ago, back early December, I had a pretty controversial show with a fellow named Dr. Sam Sugar, who is against abusive public probate guardianship. It was a very controversial show. I got a lot of feedback about it. I got more calls than I ever got before. There is another world in guardianship, and that is the family that is living within it. Gwen Smith is the daughter of Alan Smith, who is the subject of a very locally famous guardianship where his marriage to somebody from out of the blue was heavily contested in court. Gwen Smith has lived through the public guardianship or the professional guardianship world, and she has an entirely different view, a view born of experience that few of us will ever have. And I encourage you to listen because she's articulate, she's cares about her dad, and she has a lot to tell us about the world of guardianship from a perspective that is rarely ever heard. So I encourage you to listen. In 2 weeks, Dr. David Dotson of Good Samaritan Hospital is going to be here. He's going to talk about a new initiative that he is spearheading at the hospital. What if you're a vegan or you have special dietary practices and you end up in the hospital? You don't often have a whole lot of choice. Well, he feels that's wrong. And so he's spearheading an effort to help change the dietary response from the hospital dietary centers. So if you're in the hospital, he wants you to eat what you want to eat and to help make you as healthy as you possibly can. He's a very interesting guy. It's going to be a great show, and I have no doubt that you will come away with some interesting thoughts about dietary restrictions or lack thereof in the hospital. But I'm still here with Dr. Payal Patel from Brain Matters Research, talking about Alzheimer's and dementia. We only have a couple of minutes left. So Brain Matters Research specializes in clinical trials. You have a program called Know in 90, right? So you want to explain that briefly?
Yep. So Know in 90 is a program where patients can come in for a free memory screen. They have the ability to meet with a physician, either Dr. Brody or myself, to have an input as to what direction we may need to take. And during that time, we give them more information. If we think that there's something going on beyond age-appropriate changes, we kind of discuss what options might be out there as far as research versus non-research approach.
Right. And how do people reach Brain Matters Research again if
they're interested? Yep, this time I'll get the phone number correct. So it's 561-374-8461.
And you're on the web at brainmattersresearch.com, correct?
Yep.
25 clinical trials. I think one thing people need to understand is clinical research, it's somebody, a lot of people's favorite F word. It's free.
Yes,
right?
It's free.
Right.
That is absolutely very important to stress. So just to give you an idea of how expensive these tests can be, looking for Alzheimer's, an amyloid PET scan is somewhere around $3,000 to $4,000 out of pocket.
Right.
And no insurance covers that currently.
Right.
So this is a great way to see if you have any early changes consistent with Alzheimer's and to do something about it at no cost.
Right. So people like yourself who are doing the kind of great work that you're doing, I think you and I would be simpatico on this. A lot of people think their loved one is dying with Alzheimer's disease. I don't believe that. I know you don't. They're living with Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be the tragic disease that everybody thinks it is. It is a difficult disease. There's no question about it.
Sure.
It's a chronic disease. It's going to get worse. Today's the best day a person's going to have. But there is life still left in people with Alzheimer's disease, and I know that you agree with that.
I do. Well, I completely agree with that.
Well, so you've been a great guest. I can't thank you enough for being here. I know this is a big drive, and it's a very big commitment on your part, but you've given out wonderful information. I hope you'll come back someday.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it has really been a pleasure. You have so much information to give, and you are so much younger than me. You can make fun of me as all you want. Anyway, if you just tuned in, I've been here tonight with Dr. Payal Patel. Dr. Patel is with Brain Matters Research. They do about 25 clinical research trials in Delray Beach. They've been around. They're one of the largest in the country, for sure, maybe in the world, on clinical research. But it is not just clinical research. They want to talk about other ways that they can help you live the best life possible when you think that you might have Alzheimer's disease or another related dementia. It's really, really important. The first person cured of this disease will be in a clinical trial. So I want to thank my guest tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you'll come back. We're here every Monday night live on 95.9 FM, 106.9 FM on the Treasure Coast. We broadcast on Long Island, 103.9 every Wednesday evening, and we're back here again on Sunday morning. I want to thank you all. Have a great night. Listen to us again, 95.9 True Oldies. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. Good night, all. Singing.